session number 26648, reel 1.
This is tape 78AA6, recorded on the 29th of August 1978 at Bancroft Shed. It's an interview with James Pollard, weaving manager, and the interviewer is Stanley Graham. So this week we're going to, we'll just retrace our steps a bit, we'll go back a bit, and go back to when you were, you'd come here, you'd started knotting, then you'd go on to drawing.
Yeah.
And this is fetching us up to what would it be when you were drawing, about 1936 would it be?
1936.
Ah, that's it. So 1936, you're here at Bancroft, they've 1155 looms in.
1152.
1152, I'm sorry Jim.
Straight up 1152.
Ah, 52. And where were most at cloth? Now before I'm starting wrong again. Am I right in thinking that the biggest part of what they'd be weaving here then would be pure cotton? It'd be cotton.
It'd be cotton. It were all cotton in them days, Stanley, here.
Mm-hmm.
Spun only came, what we call spun, only came after the war here.
When you say spun, that what do you mean?
Artificial, man-made fibre.
Ah. And you call that spun, like, do you?
Spun, yeah. Ah,
that's it. Ah.
But it's proper, it's artificial yarn.
Mm.
Man-made.
And where were most at cloth going that were woven at Bancroft then? You know.
Well, the biggest part we're going to, we did a lot of 2 and 2 twills, which were for Australian trade.
Hmm.
And I didn't bother much with cloth of that sort, Stanley, then there, but I know 2 and 2 twills went to Australia. Tuller and a lot of our main work for such as Winsiette 2 and 2 twills were used in this country for night dresses. But like we've said before, that trade's gone now.
With flame-proofing.
With flame-proofing, you see.
Mm. How many sorts would they have at Shed then, any idea?
Well, we'll just start off. The 36-inch looms, 38-inch looms, 40-inch looms, 42-inch looms, 44-inch looms, 45-inch looms, 55-inch looms and 60-inch looms. And they used to say 60-inch was a loom, it was an inch out of being what they called a sheathing loom. If they'd had another inch on that loom, they'd have to pay them sheathing price.
How much more was that?
They'd probably gotten a penny or twopence on the wage difference, which added up in them days.
When you say a penny or twopence on the wage, what do you mean? You don't mean a penny at the end of the week?
A penny or twopence on a piece. If it's 2 pieces off, they might have fourpence difference or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, but you think of them days, fourpence, you'd wear a packet of woodbines, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Which, for a fellow weaving, that were a...
Yeah, you're right. Now, management here then, who was management? What was staff at office?
Staff in the office then.
This is 36.
Which consisted of a preparation manager. A weaving manager.
Who was preparation manager?
Stanley King.
King?
Mm-hmm. What we call a weaving manager, which were Vernon Nutter. Then clerical staff was... Not Bobby Walker. There was Tim Broughton, he was junior clerk. A fellow called Walker. I just forgot his first name. I know it weren't Robert, his brother Robert was one of the drawers up here then. And this Walker were in charge of wages. You'd also got a Manchester office, which W.E. Nutter himself, who were managing director of this firm then.
That's Wilfred.
He were in it at Manchester. along with a fella called... what they call Sydney's sister at that? Mrs...
can't remember. It doesn't matter.
Well, her husband was a Manchester man, but he did the biggest part of his business in this office from at Manchester.
Mm.
Now, that were your staff here then.
Yeah. Now, when you say Manchester man, just tell me what a Manchester man was, because a Manchester man
used to stand on Cotton Exchange in Manchester. Now, he made all spinners there, and he'd book his yarn from a central position in that, which they used to have a number, which were their stand.
That's it.
Now then, from there, he'd also go round visiting customers round Manchester and that area. And that's all in Manchester. Well, that's what Manchester man's main man.
Yeah. So he used to get the orders for the cloth, and he used to buy the yarn.
He used to buy yarn, yeah.
How did he know how much yarn to buy and what sort?
Well, any orders that he got, he'd know what cotton they wanted, what weft they wanted, what type of weft, whether it were a good weft, medium, or a low grade, which whether it's a low grade cloth or a high grade cloth, such as that. And then he gets his prices.
So a good Manchester man would have a fair idea about both weaving and cloth construction.
Cloth construction were his main.
Ah, well, that's what I mean, really. Yeah. He had a good idea.
And in the old days, Manchester men were well up with cotton deliveries from abroad.
And most of Manchester men would live in Barlick, wouldn't they? You know, each mill would have its own Manchester.
He called here every morning. They were mostly either in Ebbw or Barnoldwy, which is only 2 mile different. But they used to visit mill every morning before they went on to Manchester.
Then they go up train.
And then they went on train.
And you were saying that the Manchester man would be a good man on the cotton market itself.
He'd know what cotton crops were like and such as that. Whether they had a good year or whether it were a bad year for cotton.
And when to buy. Because obviously in them days, if they knew they had a fair market for cloth that were taking, say, 40s weft, and they had an idea it were a bad crop that year. They'd buy some in, wouldn't they?
Yeah. You see, what it amounts to, Stanley, and on top of that, all your cotton prices, your raw cotton prices, is based on American cost. Well, as I've been. Why? I just can't tell you, Stanley, but that's what... because it were all American cotton at one time.
Yeah.
Now, whether it's... why, it might have been, you know, carried on as such from the beginning.
Yeah.
But it's all based on the American market. But same as now. American cotton, there's very little used. Really. But it used to be, the biggest part used to be American.
Most of that would be good cotton, I know, wouldn't it?
Well, good cotton, yeah.
Mm.
But now your mixings are happening Peruvian, Brazilian, Indian, in one mixing for one count of yarn.
How did the cloth go out of Barlick then, in 36?
Used to go out by rail. Used to be loaded into wagons, you know, closed wagons. It used to leave here before... well, just before I came on horse and cart, which used to take it down to the station, and they used to load there into these containers. And it went done by rail from here to Manchester.
And did it go over to road transport before the war?
About 19... just before I came here in late 1934, they got the two wagons. But two motor wagons.
Nutters themselves. Mm. Oh, of course, that's what garage were for, right? Yeah. India, weren't
that's
it?
Right.
That was well, they had a wagon up to long since, didn't they? Jim Nutter drove it.
Jim Nutter drove it for years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it.
And I've seen them two wagons here before, Warmack, for, you know, two journeys a day into Manchester.
Mm.
And used to come back absolutely stacked with beans.
Yeah. How many, just for...
We were talking on different sorts, weren't we?
Yeah.
Now when you take it there, look at scope you had there from 36 inch loom up to a 60 inch loom. You used to do, and in the old days you used to, we even did a kind of a turret toweling on some dobby looms at which we had.
That's a loop cloth.
Yeah, like honeycomb with a quarter red stripe down.
Yeah.
We used to have them on 10 shafts. We used to do some fancy curtaining, which was a printed warp. We had a fine pattern on that warp, you know.
Mm.
And
so the warp were printed before you put the weft in?
Yeah.
Ah, I didn't know anything about that.
Oh, yeah.
Ah.
It were a cheap curtaining you then did, you know.
Ah, that's it.
And then the usual do, two and two twills, two and one ginettes, sateens, herringbones, Florentines. They're quite a variety, but the same as now, we've got down to what we really call more or less a plain, just two and twos.
Yeah. So, in theory, if everything were going right, trade were good, not looms were full, it'd be possible for them to turn out here something like 80,000 yards of cloth a week in them days.
Oh, I didn't do that. Well, you reckon 1152.
Well, what I was thinking was 1,000 looms and one piece of
them looms, as we're talking about in them days, Stanley, them looms weren't doing 180 picks a minute, they were doing up to 240.
How many piece could they get off a loom in a week?
Well, that's just the... Well, we'll average it.
Huh.
Well, if you average that, they'd do two a week.
Oh, it's going to be a lot more then.
Because on some cloths, you see, you take a Florentine, which is thick weft, coarse reed, not very high pick. They could do up to 2.5 pieces a week of them.
So
100 yards, you see.
So you're getting on for 200,000
yards. Oh, yeah.
Ah. Like if there's 1,000 loom, two pieces each, that's 200 yard off each loom, that's 200,000 yard a week.
A week.
My God, it's some cloth in it, when you think.
It is that.
Out of 1 mil.
Out of 1 mil. You see, they weren't like we are now, tens. They were fours and fives.
That's it, yeah. I mean, each weaver had four
each
and five.
Each weaver, and I should say your production off them were going up for round about 94% or 95%.
Yeah.
Of them looms weekly, although they were Lancashire looms.
That's it, they were into it all.
They were into it all the time.
Yeah.
Because the overlooker's wage depended on weaver.
That's it, yeah, yeah.
So they were no playing about, they just rode the toilet. They couldn't, they'd happen about two puffs in toilet and out. Or overlooker were looking for him because it were his wage that were at stake.
Tell me something, while we're just thinking about number of looms and this, that and the other. When there were, say for 1,000 loom shop, working on the same sort of stuff that we were working on then, and let's just assume that they were running on rewound weft, you know, that they got on to rewound
weft.
How many perns would you need for a mill with 1,000 looms in it?
1,000 looms?
Yeah.
Well, we'll take, say, on an average count, say, a 30's weft.
Yeah.
Now, then, that, in them days, with a burn as we're using now, has run roughly about 8 minutes.
Yeah, so that's...
So you take it, in them days, what we're talking about, Stanley, you started at 7 o'clock in the morning, you had a breakfast at 8:30, well, 9. So you're an hour and a half then, aren't you? And then you work from 9 o'clock till 12:30. So you had a 5 hour stint, aren't you, from 7 o'clock?
Yeah.
Is that correct? Mm. Am I right? 3.5, 1.5, that's 5, yeah?
Yeah.
And then you work from 1:30 till 5:30. So you worked a 9 hour day, didn't you?
So each loom on that would need, if they need roughly 70 perns a day for one loom. It's 8 an hour, it's 8 minutes.
It's short of 9, ain't it? It's short of 9, ain't it, hour?
Yeah. Well, something like that.
So nine. So we'll call it 9-inch hour, Stanley.
Well, that's 9 nines or 81.
That's 81.
So that's 80.
Yeah.
So that means that, and then you've got to allow, how many would you allow over the top of that for what we're going to be studying out idle and studying?
You've got to have that replaced.
Yeah. Each day.
Each day.
So you're going to need more than double. You're going to need double to
plus. You want at least 2.25 times that.
Aye, at least.
You see?
Yeah. So that's going to be, say we've said 80, that's 80,000, that's 160, so you're going to be at least 200,000 perms.
200,000 perms for 1152 loom on a 4 and 5 loom system.
Yeah.
But, you see, I'm just going back when they knock Saturday mornings off, but in 1936 you work Saturday morning till 10:30.
Aye.
So you're 3.5 hours there, you see.
Yeah.
So you can say you're another half day at top of that, Stanley, can't you?
Yeah.
To carry on with, you'd want roughly around about 240,000 pounds.
Mm. It's going some, isn't it? Now then, we'll just go forward a little bit. You were I take it you were drawing in right up to what?
Right up, well, no, I had various jobs, Stanley. Why, I don't know. Whether they had something in mind, not as I don't know. I did a period, like I said, I did twisting, then I had to learn drawing.
Mm.
From drawing, I had to go into the tape room.
Who were taping here then?
There were Joe Nutter, Rennie Shepherd, and Joe Calverley.
So we had three tapes?
Yeah, three tapes running then, and bear in mind, them tapes were from 7 a.m. till 9 o'clock every night except for Wednesday night. And they also worked 7 o'clock till 10:30 Saturday morning.
So they worked on donkey engine for
they worked on donkey engine.
3.5 hours every night.
Yeah,
from
5 to 9 o'clock, donkey were knocked on, you see, switched over.
Ah.
So actually, preparation staff, as long as we were here, nearly brought up to war, always worked over till 9 o'clock, except for one night a week, which was Wednesday.
They need to do, really, because you always used to reckon about one tape for 300 loom, didn't you?
Well, yeah, that's what they reckoned, it all did. They tried to cut it down less, you see. But it doesn't work out that way, Stanley, it just depends on sorts you run, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, to say thicker your twist is and slower drying it is, so you can't run as fast on your tape. Anyway, as we were talking about these hours that we did, Stanley, you bear in mind, some weeks, I've seen as many as 500 coming out a week.
Warps?
500 warps a week, you get? Especially when it's such as Florentine's in, you know.
Yeah. Stuff that we're getting through.
Which is down in, say, every fortnight.
Yeah. When you say down in a warp, or a warp,
that's right, a fortnight weaving in shed.
Mm.
Now they'll laugh at you when you tell them that, but it's so easy you get mixed up with ours, Stanley, what you do now and what you did in them days, don't you?
Mm.
You can reckon a week in them days as 48.5 hours, can't you?
Mm. Well, more, I mean, we're talking about the tapes working 3.5 hours extra, that's 15 hours on top of that. I mean, you're going into 70 hours straight. But, so a boiler would be here, of course, because they'd have to keep boiler on.
Yeah.
Mm. And how about housewife shift here? Did they ever run one before the war?
No.
No, that were after, weren't it?
That were after.
I will leave that till after. So you were drawing, and then you went in taping as well.
I went in taping and all.
Mm.
And from taping, I went and did 2 months in weaving shed.
Actually weaving?
Under somebody.
Ah.
Now, it didn't make sense to me. I thought I would be mugged round the place, you know.
Well, it's fairly obvious what were happening, isn't it, really?
But, and then, gradually I wandered my way back up to drawing buffy.
Mm. How about cloth looking, didn't you go?
Well, I didn't go into cloth looking after that.
Oh.
But,
now, we're coming up now then towards war.
Yeah.
And What were your feelings when war was declared? Can you remember?
Well, feeling Stanley, when they announced you were at war, you didn't think all really about it at first, really, did you? And then you suddenly realised you were, what can I say? You might not be here so much longer.
In danger.
So, a bit of silliness goes out on you. You're beginning to feel like a man in them days, aren't you? Growing up, faster than what you thought of doing.
You weren't married then, were you? You were calling.
Yeah, me. I was married.
Oh, I was married. Now, when were you married? Now then, what day were you married?
Stanley, my memory for getting married, anniversary, out like that, is hopeless.
Oh.
It was in May sometime.
Oh, dear. Oh, well.
No, what day? I don't know.
Oh, that'll be all right. We'll have to consult with Ivy. Sheila remembered. I've never known a woman yet that couldn't remember a marriage.
I can.
Well, anyway, you're married. Yeah. War's declared.
Yeah.
And a bit of the silliness has gone out to you.
Well, you're a bit stunned, really. You know.
Tell me, before war was actually declared, did you take much notice of what was going on in papers? You know, I mean, did you realise that there was a silly bugger called Hitler in Europe?
Yes, you realised, Sidney. Stanley,
yeah.
And you says, it's bloody time somebody stop this silly bugger, you know, or he's going to grab everything, and yet, you wonder who the hell's going to stop him, and when we found out, it were us, so we thought, that was funny, we're in a bit of oil now, so, it's, everybody's waiting for papers coming through the door, being called up, and, start. Expeditionary force, good. Bloody hell, they ain't at the Esalon. It's ploughed through them, so it's getting damn serious. Then your own papers come.
When did yours come?
Oh, I thought not. Oh, it was just before Christmas, in 1940. And I knew there was something wrong because Ivy brought me dinner up. I said, what the hell's up? Ivy's going with me dinner. She'd also brought me papers up and all, I were called up. So there were tears, you know. Anyway, that was it.
What were you called up into?
Into artillery. Stationed at Carlisle. Adrian's camp. Then I was there for a period, and then I moved into heavies, artillery. So I did a move there to down to Oswest Street.
And you were actually, you were doing your artillery training then, were you?
At Oswest Street, yeah.
What were you training on?
4.5s, I kite guns.
Yeah.
And then after we come out of this training, this first station were up at Glasgow, a place called Shettleston. They never had the bombs up there, like,
yeah.
Guns that were there. Well, everybody was surprised. Damn sirens went first night. Never been known before up there. So he runs the guns. Hellfire, they wouldn't go. Rusted up. What a performance it were. Anyway, they fired night after, but this is where it were during war, Stanley.
Oh, you didn't take your own guns up with you? There were guns that were waiting there when you got there.
They were on the site, yeah. These were 3.5.
Have you had them before?
Some, but they don't. They'd mucked about training on them, you know. Then we were doing damn guards up there with pickaxe shafts. No rifle. Still had his gas mask in a cardboard box. This was in 1940. And then we were moved from there, and we moved to near a place, near Middlesbrough, near Dorman Longs. On Malford, is it Tees?
Yeah.
We were right on Malford Tees there, and these airboats used to come up for depth charges to take out, you know, to destroy
us. Oh, that's Shields,
were
it?
Yeah, up that way. And we were like guarding such as Dorman Longs.
With pickaxe shafts?
Yeah, stood on guard with pickaxe shafts. No rifle, we ain't got a rifle then.
Oh.
But we had 4.5s up there on the side. And yeah. And they were just nuisance raiders up there, no?
Yeah.
Just these coming over and create all. We were up for a month, solid. Anyway, I were on leave. And they, instead of dropping on bombs on Dorm and Long, they dropped them on to council chambers, erect car. Because I don't know how many councillors. Like it was a fully light, but, you know, it was. So I got my papers when we moved. We'd have to go up to, back up to Scotland. To a site up there. And, oh, it was pretty terrible. They were out at Fields Marsh from anywhere.
Where were that?
Oh, I don't know, Stanley, where it was. I weren't interested there. All I could do was. But they walked Fields. Whatever we were guarding there, I didn't know. And then we were moved from there to near a place called Stevenson in Scotland.
Mm, yeah.
And we were guarding our dear ammunition works there.
That's it, explosive works.
Mm. And I had a good deal up there, I enjoyed myself.